show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And as promised, I am joined by my good friend, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, good morning, Professor Harvey. How are you?
Earl, how you doing, man?
Well, it's, let's see, it was, the low was, I think, 28, 29 last night, and it's struggling to get up to about 45 today.
Well, you have my deepest sympathy. You have my deepest sympathy.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, it does. That's one of the reasons why I left that area. I had to get out of there to find a warmer place.
So it's safe to say it's a little warmer than that there.
Oh, yeah. The humidity is already up, and it's expected to get up somewhere around 80, 81, maybe.
Well, Professor
today.
Harvey, you didn't have to go into graphic detail.
Well, yes, I did. I had to punish you. I had to punish you. I'm sorry.
And you know, we're looking at May next month, and we're going to be, you know, we should be around 59. You know what it is. You lived here for
a long
time.
30-some years I lived up there, so I'm well aware of the weather, I tell you.
So let me do this, Professor Harvey. I want to go here before we get into all the other things that we're going to talk about. The city of Milwaukee has thus far had 72 homicides. And Professor Harvey, over the weekend, there were 22 people shot. Now, we're not talking about Detroit or New Orleans, you know, or places that, you know, Baltimore, or places where that's kind of commonplace. That's now happening in the city that you lived in for 37 years. And this is getting to be more and more commonplace. You and I remember the city at a different time. And, you know, the answer, and now we've got people who, there's a young man who just became the mayor, and they're all trying to bring pressure on him. What is he going to do? He just got there, Professor Harvey. You know, yeah. you can point the finger and say, yeah, but he's the mayor now. But that's disingenuous of anybody who knows what has happened in this city like you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you and I both know, were aware of the issues that Arthur Jones faced when he became police chief.
Right.
And we talked about numerous times how things elevate. But, Earl, there's something a lot deeper than just what's happening in Milwaukee. And I was looking on the television the other night watching the news, and I see where they are grilling the black mayor of Chicago.
Right, Lori Lightfoot.
For the uptick and the increase in crime.
Yeah, Lori Lightfoot.
And I remember years ago when Clarence Lightner became the mayor of Raleigh, one of the first major cities in the South, where a black man was elected mayor since Reconstruction, and then suddenly the crime started going up. Well, it's always gone up, and part of that is a resentment for those individuals assuming that situation. But do you think for one minute that when Daley was mayor or Jane Burns was mayor of Chicago that they didn't have all this excess crime?
That's correct.
And a lot of it is the media, but you got to also understand that a lot of it is the angst and anger of a majority of population who hates to see that process take place, and so there's going to be an uptick in violence. You wonder how much of the killing of the black members of that church in South Carolina occurred because Obama was in the White House. I mean, there are just so many different dynamics. This country is so divided and so full of hate for itself, and groups divided by race, by geography, by income. They're so divided. And then when you got over 400 million guns, in the country, 400 million guns, Earl, you only got a population of somewhere around 338 million. You got more guns than you have people.
Right.
And so when you have all of that, and then the divisive, hateful nature of the last 4 years, led by Donald Trump, who survived and campaigned on hate and divisiveness.
You know, Professor,
you got all of that going on.
I just had a guy call who is a conservative who said that, you know, the reason, you know, you guys are having the trouble you're having in Milwaukee is because you guys for 40 years chose Democratic mayors, and, you know, look at what Tim Scott has done. And so you hear that foolishness. I didn't tolerate it because, you know, why would I waste my time with somebody who has no concept whatsoever about what they're talking about? You know, go ahead.
Earl, the thing is, you know, who manufactures the guns in this country? You know, you don't find a single gun manufacturer in the central city in this country, unless it's some little underground group that's turning out one or two weapons. But the weapons are produced by individuals who probably, for more than often than not, probably voted conservative, think conservative, and are vehement champions of the Second Amendment. They will fight to the death to defend the second right to bear arms. But at the same time, they will elect people at both the city, county, state, and federal level who believe in denying people the right to vote. They will suppress the vote, but they demand the right to bear arms. And those are the things that eventually filter their way up to when a person gets in power, gun sales go up. We know that when Obama came into office, gun sales went up almost 300%, 400% in some areas. Right-wing militia groups popped up to the tune of well over 75% of what they were before Obama came in 2008. That is sending you a message. It's sending a message. You know, that we could reach you anytime we get ready if we are angry and disgruntled. And then you couple that with another major phenomenon that's going on. Well, two other major phenomena that I believe socially and economically and politically are occurring. One is the American middle class is dying.
Yes.
Earl, it is dying. And the day we lose the powerful middle class, which was largely populated, mostly populated by white America, they held most of those prestigious positions, economically, socially, and politically. But the American middle class is gone. It's gone. And will it come back? It all depends on what white America decides it wants to do. The other phenomenon is, and people don't pay much attention to this, but it's true, and it's the basis for what's going on. We have destroyed one of the most significant institutions that this country has to help produce the middle class and to help build on American greatness, and that is that we have declared war on public education. I tell people more than often than not, the day that we started seeing the decline in public education in this country was a dark day in this country's history. And we saw it in Milwaukee in 1996. When they voted down that referendum to reform a bill, 18 or so new schools,
right,
where the kids were, so they could cut out busing. And this is something that the politicians, especially the conservative politicians, at the city, county, state, and federal level were pushing. And all of a sudden now that those schools in the central city were failing, but schools in the suburbs are doing just fine. Both of them public institutions. But both of them with different results. And most of the teachers in those public schools in the central cities, most of them were white. So it's not like there were black teachers causing those schools to fail. This is a phenomenon, Earl, that undermines the American middle class. Because what is one of the greatest providers of that? Trained individuals with diplomas who had avenues to go into manufacturing or go into college somewhere. And then look what we've done to our kids going to college. They go into college trying to get a better education, and in 4 or 5 years, they come out with a debt that is huge. And they spend the next 10 to 20 years trying to get themselves out of debt. So what we're doing is we're killing the dreams and hopes of the American middle class.
So
and then you add on top of that more drugs being poured in. Drugs, I mean legal drugs. I'm talking now about the medication handed out by the pharmaceutical companies.
So, Professor Ivey, hang on a second, because we're going to have to be going to a break in a minute, but I want the listening audience to know a little bit about your background. You are a ex-military guy, and so you are a firearm owner. You're not some guy who's just beating up people who own guns. You are a licensed person who owns weapons. But you're also, again, a veteran. You're also a professor. So, you know, you're not just some guy who, you know, has an opinion without having the background in which you have, that I think adds a lot of legitimacy to why you say the things you say, and people need to be aware of that before we go any further. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My good friend, Professor Bob Harvey, although I'm kind of hating on him because he's down where it's 80 degrees right now. And I'm, you know, where I am. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789. Be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, at the root of all of this is our nation is really in trouble. And there are people who don't want to believe that that's a fact. And our nation really needs to take a thorough examination of itself, because the future is not going to be so bright. I mean, you can't continue to say, we continue to spend all this money on the military, and that's going to keep us elevated, and that's going to keep us on the top of the heap, when inside of the nation, the rot in the nation is so plain for everybody to see. I mean, Professor Harvey, we're the COVID situation that is horrific, and yet in the face of it, we're still arguing with people because we don't want to wear a mask. Never mind if there's science that tells you, you know, it's safer. We've got people who will ignore all of that because guess what? I'm an American. I'll do whatever the hell I want to do, and nobody's going to tell me anything different.
Well, Earl, you know, when you got a society that's tearing itself apart, you pick and choose what you want to adhere to and what you don't want to adhere to.
Right.
And when you tell people, when you have people make these blanket statements saying, well, you know, every person should have a right to bear arms, but they don't really mean that, because in reality, in terms of the law, if you have a convicted felon, you can't own a weapon. Everybody on the block, including the little JJ, who's just 3 years old in the diaper. You know, I mean, he has more rights than you do to bear arms. You know, and where do we draw the line? I mean, I used to have this debate all the time when I was with my, you know, Army Reserve unit. And those guys be going on and on about the right to bear arms. And I had one guy stand up and say, I got a gun right now for my 2-year-old grandson. And, you know, he'll, as soon as he turns 3, I'm arming the little rascal. And my thing is, I mean, how stupid can you get? Because one of the things that you understand is, where is the cutoff about who bears arms? And you can't sit there and say everybody has that right. And I said, what about the guy that is? And I heard one deputy sheriff that was sitting at the table. He was a master sergeant, so he was sitting there arguing, well, you know, I want my 3-year-old grandson to own a weapon. you know, and everybody should have their right. I said, well, what about that guy that you just locked up and gave 25 years?
So Professor Harvey,
a weapon?
I want you to hold that thought, because this is just what the article I was reading this morning. It's out of Kansas City. After passing a law 6 years ago allowing convicted domestic abusers to carry firearms, Missouri lawmakers have again stalled on legislation that would close that loophole. Representative McCreary, a Democrat who represents part of St. Louis, was in office in 2016 when the wide-ranging, contentious gun bill was signed into law. Why would you allow allow convicted domestic abusers to carry firearms, Professor Harvey? They did that six years ago in Missouri.
Earl, the bottom line is that you continue to try to find a way to put weapons in the hands of individuals that don't deserve to have them because, you know, they feel that it's protecting their right to bear arms, you know, and more sensible people. But what they don't seem to realize is that most sensible people aren't committing the crimes. It's the extremists that will always get their hands on weapons. And the more weapons that are out there, the more equal access they're going to have to those weapons. And all automatically it's going to end up in the hands of children. I saw a study that was on television the other day. It was saying that 1 in 8 children at some point during the course of it, going to get their hands on a deadly weapon that's found in the household. Yeah, it's not happening out there in the street. It's happening right there in the house.
Right.
And so, you know, there's so much blind belief in the Second Amendment that it's like the charge of the light brigade. We don't ask you to go out. We just go ahead and do it. We just blindly go ahead thinking that things are going to work themselves out, whether or not. Because the weapon systems out there today, whether it's a handgun or whether it's a rifle, are far more deadly than they were back at the turn of the 18th century when the founding fathers and the colonialists were trying to create this society and it grew into the United States of America. We don't understand that the weapon systems are different now. An assault weapon can do damage to a lot of people because that's what it was designed to do. And if you go back to the 13th, 14th, and 15th century and look at the development of handguns in the West, it was already in the East, but in the West, you will find that handguns were designed for close quarter combat to kill human beings. That's what it was designed to do. But the assault weapons today is a deadly piece of equipment that is designed to take out a whole lot of people quickly, just a squeeze of that trigger. And so we don't, it's like our mindset of dealing with modern day deadly weapons is stuck somewhere back in the 18th century when we created the Second Amendment, along with the other 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights. We are still stuck back in the 18th century for a 21st and 22nd century phenomenon known as assault weapons. And so we're behind the times on that. And then, of course, as we become more divisive, as we have become, we find out that it's easier for one side that dominates the manufacturing and control of these weapon systems and the production of these weapon systems, those individuals are the ones who call the shots as to where the guns go, but not just the guns. Because the weapon system is one thing. The ammunition that goes with them is another phenomenon. And so they're matching magazines, they're matching the ammunition to go along with the handgun or the rifle, in this case, so that you can engage a target accurately and quickly. And this stuff is just readily available. It's as easy to get a gun as it is to get drugs.
Yes.
Yes. And there's a reason why the two are married and go hand in hand, guns and drugs. You know, so that's where we are right now. We are a divided nation, and We are afraid that the other one is coming to get us. That's what I call the boogeyman nation.
So
we're now in a nation where the boogeyman is coming to get us.
We've got to go. We've got to go to a break. But there's no way that the society can prosper at the rate it's going now with what you have just laid out. You know, it doesn't matter where you live, you know, in the long run, because, you know, you're not going to be safe from the outcomes, you know, where somebody, no matter where you are, can bring danger and death.
But it's internal as well as external, because you got just as much danger in the house as you do from the outsiders.
Okay, Professor Ivory, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Professor Bob Harvey is on the line. I'm always excited to bring him to you. So we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, Professor Bob Harvey from Charlotte, sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. And Sam, you've got a text message that someone wrote. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I'm getting a text in from CJ that I would like to voice. He says, the professor never mentioned the destruction of the family structure. Where's the dads and facts? I'm not sure, CJ, about that one. I'm sorry if I didn't voice that correctly. But lowest unemployment ever in the black community, and every demographic only under Trump. The cries for your Democratic leaders defund the police, and yet he's the one with no concept of reality.
That's enough. Professor Harvey, you want to...
Well, you know, I mean, it's amazing when you sit here and understand that one of the roots of fatherless black families occurred under one of the most brutal and oppressive societal, you know, institutions that this country has ever had, and that's the institution of slavery, where the black male had no particular role in that. And in a society where you continue to degrade, historically continue to degrade and dehumanize those individuals, you come away with the clear understanding that despite the fact that the 19th century issue of slavery is over, it ended with the 13th Amendment in 1865, let's understand that the conditions for dehumanizing the black male has continued. And the George Floyd situation is a classic example of where that life does not mean anything. The black male's life doesn't mean anything. So don't act like the hands are clean, you know, of the society where you have the dominant force just completely destroying or just continue to disarm that black family, black male figure. I mean, when you look at it from their standpoint, there's a subtle part of this that tells us that there are certain segments of the white dominant society that continues to play off of that. So it's something that's ingrained in us, in our society. And to take it a little further, we talk about black-on-black crime, because I know where a lot of that is leading and what the young man comes out. I understand that black-on-black crime is high. It's almost up to 83% to 84%. Of, you know, of the crime that's committed in the black community. Black on black crime is there. But what about white on white crime? 90% of all the crime committed in the white community is committed by whites on whites. Nobody's talking about that. Now, why is that social phenomenon so important? It's important because you show me an ethnic and or a racial group that presides in anywhere in our society under any conditions. And I will show you a society where the majority of the crime committed against that particular ethnic and or racial group is committed by people from that group. And one of the reasons for it is quite simple. You live in the same property, you have the same issues and problems, and you take it out on each other. Displaced aggression has always been a part of our society. And inner aggression towards one another, that's one of the phenomena that we've always been a part of. So to sit here and want to play off of this thing about the black families, disgruntled, most black men are with their families. But the media is not going to play off of that because it sells. Whether it's Fox News or MSNBC or NBC or ABC or CBS or any of them, they're going to play off of the idea of black-on-black crime because it helps to sell and make people feel comfortable. It wasn't black-on-black crime to murder those little babies up there at Sandy Hook. But nobody wants to talk about that. They'll talk about the 10 shootings that occurred in the black community on Friday night, but they don't want to touch on that type of crime. They'll talk about what Antifa is doing, out there, but they don't want to talk about what happened on January 6th when the whole world saw what was going on. So we have to understand what the society is doing and why it's doing it. And it has nothing always to do with what black people are doing. What are the rest of America doing? And who controls the purse strings? And who controls the manufacturing of guns, drugs, and bullets? Who controls that?
So Professor Harvey, I want to change up now and have you give us your perspective on what's taking place in Ukraine. You keep hearing more and more from Russia, and they keep threatening and talking more and more about nuclear weapons. Let me ask you, Professor Harvey. You're a military guy, and you know your way around what's been going on with these wars and our involvement. What's going on in Ukraine that we should be engaged or involved to the degree that this could possibly lead to World War III?
Well, what's happening here, Earl, is, when they talk about the Cold War, let's go back and take a look at that and talk. The Cold War pretty much started at the close of World War II in 1945. By then, Stalin was already proposing his post-World War II agenda. And communism was spreading like wildfire all the way through to East Berlin, to East Germany, and then, of course, West Germany, where the Allies, the British, the French, and the Americans put a stop to them there. And then, of course, shortly after that, NATO was founded, and then, of course, in 1955, the Soviet Union came back and created the Warsaw Pact. So we've been in these armed camps ever since. But remember, the Cold War was not just a theoretical and philosophical and ideological argument with two different concepts, communism as opposed to the West and the free world. But there were a whole lot of little hot wars, the Korean War, Vietnam, the French before they were driven out in 1954, Dien Bien Phu, all of those conflicts, the Chinese Revolution in 1948, even the Arab-Israeli conflicts, there were about six of them between 1948 all the way up until 1993, where you had these conflicts, and always it was this battle between it. Even with the Iraq conflict and the conflict in Afghanistan, the Russian invasion of Afghanistan, the Soviet Union in 1980, all of those conflicts were hot wars that were fought. Now, the current expansion of Russia's been doing that for a long time. They've been expanding, and their whole attempt to go into Afghanistan in 1979, really, when you think about the exact date, all of those conflicts were testing the boundaries of the commitment and the resolve of the West as opposed to the East. And so that situation is going to continue. Now, what Putin has told you is that he wants to restore the greatness of the former Soviet Union. That's what his goal is. He's told what he told you. He didn't try to hide it. He's right. told you that. And going into Afghanistan was the first attempt by the Soviet Union. But that failed. And, of course, that cost the Russians and the Russian Empire fought. The communist empire, the Soviet Union, faltered. Then Putin comes along and decides that he's going to start expanding west by gobbling up the former Soviet satellite states of the Baltic states, of Estonia, Lithuania, and then, of course, going all the way down into looking at what he's going to do in Crimea. And now he's going after the prize jewel of Ukraine. He's already got Belarus under his control. But when you look at the Baltic states, they are now shaking in their boots. And then there's Poland that they've got to worry about. And if you take a look at a map, you'll see the three Baltic states. Then you will take a look at the border of Poland. And then, of course, you got Germany that's got to worry, being worried a little bit. And then, of course, if you go further south, you've got Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia. All of those countries were a part of the Soviet bloc at one time. But now many of them, Poland, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia and others, they've now joined NATO. And of the 30 states that make up the country that make up NATO, they have already in their charter that if one is attacked, we all attack. So, but what Putin is trying to do is expand his boundaries so that he won't have to worry about somebody next door taking over, you know, his country and invading his country.
Let me ask you, Professor Harvey.
And he has the nuclear weapons.
So
he has 13,000 of them.
So if that was America, would we be worried about somebody taking, you know, next door to us taking control
The United States has been pushing this since the days of the Monroe Doctrine of 1823. When we stated emphatically, and this was in the 19th century, in the early part of the 19th century, we said we don't want any European interference in the Western Hemisphere, not just North America, but Central America as well as South America. So the Monroe Doctrine, theoretically, in the Organization of American States, that entity has been in place for well over a century and a half, and the main thing is keep European and other foreign entities out of our affairs. And so, yeah, we're going to react to that.
So then,
well, naturally, we're going to protect our own borders.
So then, why are we upset with Russia trying to do the same thing?
Because there's a thing called history, Earl, and there's a thing that talked about how Germany in 1938 went into Czechoslovakia unprovoked and unchallenged. Then the next thing they do in 1939, they went into Poland. And the results, World War II. Now, we focus a lot on Germany invading Poland in 1939. But what we don't focus on is the fact that Stalin made a pact with one devil with another, with Hitler, and he decided to go into Poland from the east. And while Stalin was doing it, he had his sights going after Finland, you know, with the Finnish and Russian war in 1940, and that's why Finland right now is talking about joining NATO along with Sweden. So you've got some people who remember what happened in 1930.
So, Professor Harvey, hold the thought. Professor Harvey's on the line. You can join us, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny Charlotte, North Carolina. Professor Harvey, before we went to break, you were explaining, as I asked you, you initially explained why Russia is so touchy about, you know, their border situation. And you mentioned Sweden and Finland, who are now openly saying that they want to join NATO, even though months ago they were totally opposed to it. But
sure.
So if you're Russia and you are watching what is taking place, around them, and NATO, led by the United States, is making these moves. If you are Putin, understanding or believing why that America and NATO is encroaching in their territory?
Well, you know, Earl, it one of the things, and I was sitting here, you know, talking about the Baltic states. The key are the Baltic states, Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia. On March 29th of 2004. This was under the Bush administration. Those, three Baltic states, they all, joined NATO. And if you take a look at a map, and you really have to have, for those people who don't really understand it, I mean, I've taught maps for so many years that I've got a lot of it built in my head. And understanding World War II, which is one of the areas that I focus a lot of my academic career on, and teaching military history, you learn to appreciate the map of Europe. You can see how those countries in Europe are scrambling, especially in Central and Eastern Europe, scrambling right now to join NATO, because one of the things that led to World War II, if you remember, in 1939, when Germany invaded Poland, that triggered. They didn't do a whole lot when they should have in Czechoslovakia in 1938. But when they went into Poland, England and France had already signed a pact with Poland, and that's what drew England and France to join Poland. They didn't have the military wherewithal to either by air, sea, or land to come in and aid Poland, because you had to go through the Baltic Sea and the seas and the whole bit, and they didn't have the necessary means to get to them. But they did declare war, and they did start coming up with ways to try to get in, to give them moral support, including allowing the leadership of Poland to flee to England to set up their satellite government. But the central fact is that they learned a lesson from that. And when I first heard about the conflict 3 months ago, that's when I came to realize that I wanted to send in an airborne brigade or whatever, or an armored brigade. But the thing is, you got to go through countries like Poland and like Germany, like Romania, Hungary. And if they don't allow you to come in and so you can support them, you're going to send them boys and girls in there and get them cut off and get them wiped out. And you don't want to make that mistake. Remember, 1921.
So you mean you're talking about America sending ground troops into Ukraine?
Sending ground troops. That's the only way you stop a bully. That's the only way you do it. You know, remember, Earl, that the tragedy that happened in World War One. See, there are plenty of lessons to be taught here. And when Germany started becoming abrasive in World War One, the thing that everybody talked about to keep Germany from acting up was the creation of the League of Nations. The League of Nations was created at the close of World War One to make sure we halted German aggression. And the United States never joined for several various reasons, but we didn't join. And everybody referred to the League of Nations as the armless cop, that it didn't have any teeth, that the French and the English and the rest of them had no stomach for fighting to prevent German aggression. And so by 1936, when Germany started going into Alsace-Lorraine, taking back some of their lost territory, Hitler came to power in 1932 and 1933, and we stood by, and the League of Nations was worthless. And many people felt that if the United States had joined the league, and it was, keep in mind that the Republicans, not the same Republican Party of these Lundebergs we got right now in there, but the Republican Party of them was opposed to Woodrow Wilson and the United States joining the league. And their failure to join meant that we didn't have the ground forces necessary to stop it. Now, I've always believed that from a military standpoint, that the only way to stop an aggressor is to stand up to him and punch him in the mouth. You know, but when you can't do that because of restrictions and trepidations on the part of your allies and for the conditions on the ground, then you're faced with the dilemma that a bully is going to push as far as he can until somebody punches him in the mouth. Now, everybody's talking about Putin threatening to use nuclear weapons. Putin is not stupid. Why is he not going to do that? Because at least 60 to 70% of Russian oil reserves are committed to providing that resource, valuable resource, to the European market. Now, you launch a nuclear war and destroy all of those countries and everything around there, your economic power is gone. Putin is not totally stupid. He just knows that he's going to push this thing as far as he can. And unfortunately, the United States, under both Bush, Obama, Trump, and now Biden, all of them had their hands tied, not so much because they would not have committed troops to that conflict, but because their allies don't have the stomach for it. And I think that's I'm just being honest with you from my standpoint, because if anybody that would scare the hell out of Putin is Germany, because Germany twice in the 20th century raised its ugly head and took on and inflicted heavy damage on the Soviet Union. Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And Europe has always been caught up in conflict. What Putin is doing right now is ethnic cleansing, because look what he's doing in Ukraine, bombing hospitals and the whole bit. That's the atrocities of war on the Eastern Front. They've always been that way. And everybody talks about Hitler being vicious. Stalin and Hitler were two of the greatest dictators in world history.
Well, Professor Harvey, what about what Russia is doing and saying right now and accusing America of the proxy war? And there's no question we're in the proxy war. I mean, you know, they're 100% correct, but they're also
look what they did to the United States in Vietnam. The United States won 96% of the damn combat operations in Vietnam, but we didn't fight 100% war. And the politicians ran the damn war instead of let the soldiers and the generals fight it and win it. So the end results were we didn't engage in total war. Now our kids were being trained. I know because I was a drill sergeant, and understanding how you train soldiers, we were trained in order to fight a conventional war, and we turned around and ended up, trying to fight a guerrilla war and a limited war because we were afraid of China and Russia. Look at Korea. MacArthur wanted to go all the way, to take over North Korea, too, but we were worried about the Chinese. We didn't think it was going to happen. And what happened? The Chinese came across the border and expanded the war in Korea, so we ended up with a truce there.
So, Professor Harvey, hang on, Professor Harvey. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.